Was it something we said?
Are you talking to me?
Do you have a comment to make?
Are you talking to me?
Or a bone to pick with us? Why not send us an email to feedback@midwestpeaceprocess.com or join our forum at forum.midwestpeaceprocess.com, or you can just leave us a comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/midwestpeace, or follow us on Twitter @midwestpeace. So that's how to contact us. Now let's give you something to contact us about. This week, we limit our answers to 2 minutes. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you now. Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
to remind
Process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode now. 45. The kids call it the process. Today is October 4th, 2012. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
This is Rob. I'm mad.
What are you mad about?
It's the debate show. Frustrated.
Are you?
Why?
Because your candidate lost to Mitch Romney?
Mitch Romney.
Yeah.
I was Alter just, ego.
Yeah, I was just listening to On Point tonight on NPR, and some caller called in and was complaining about that Mitch Romney and how he was going to close down the Big Bird channel. Like, are you serious? This can't be a real caller. This is a plant. The Democratic Party put this guy up to call it in, sounding like some hayseed who doesn't even know how to pronounce his candidate's name.
I thought that that would be especially in the previous elections, that it would be money well spent. Like, if think how much money they spent on ads. What if they just paid people $50 to act like your other candidate's supporters and be a total doofus?
Right.
I mean, wouldn't that convince more independent voters?
You would think.
You know, that'd be money well spent, I think.
Yeah.
No, it wouldn't, because you don't need to pay people to do that. They do it automatically.
But you could increase the numbers of people.
You could saturate the media with morons. Oh, wait.
Wait, yep. Done and done.
All right. So, yeah, we watched the debate last night, and we actually live tweeted it. I don't know if any of our followers on Twitter caught any of our witticisms. We tried.
You guys were both doing it?
He said followers. I was the only one following.
Oh.
Well, we did pick up a couple of new followers last night.
Hashtag awesome.
Yeah, that's right. So, what were your just general impressions? I mean, dare I ask, who do you think won? Because you know what? I don't care who won. That is just ridiculous to talk about who won a debate. Because what is that going to do, really? Even if it was obvious that somebody won, should that influence your decision about who you're going to vote for? It's like, oh, well, he won. I got to vote for the winner.
Right, yeah.
Because debating is such an important skill when you're a president, right? They spend so much time debating things.
Giving prepared remarks to questions. Yeah, I think the idea of the winner, I was wondering if that was kind of an American thing. Like, well, who won?
That's right.
What do you mean, who won? You know, like you get a little trophy or something? Yeah.
The American people won. That's who.
Yeah, I hate the winning losing thing.
Do you hate it just because Obama lost, or do you hate it?
Pretty much. Okay. And can we get it out of the way how sucky Jim Lehrer was?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Come on, old man. Even the first question, I was like, that's a terrible question. Hopefully it'll get better. Because what did he do? Like, he didn't challenge the candidates. Like, I like you know, I'm thinking of kind of a David Gregory sometimes. Like, he will go after, or even like a Chris Wallace.
Right.
Like, we'll go after a candidate on stuff that they've said and challenge them to reconcile it with some sort of reality. Yeah. And they'll and kind of force them to pivot, you know.
Right.
You know, but there was no pivoting needed because he said, are there differences between you on governing? You know, what the
right
what question is that?
Could we make the questions a little more general?
Right. And so it just allowed them to launch into prepared remarks, you know.
Right. And then they just walked all over him. I mean, Mitt at one point was like, and you know what? I'm going to shut down PBS and fire you.
Right. Yeah, that was a little unforced error on his part when he was like, I like PBS. I even like you. Like, oh, well, thanks, Mitch.
Yeah. Thanks, Mitch Romley.
Yeah, that was a little bit of an a-hole comment right there.
Yeah, it was.
And he said he needed a new accountant when he, I forget what he was talking about. There was
the
some
overseas
funny.
Shipping.
He's like, if that's a way to make
overseas tax break.
Yeah, he said, if you can get tax breaks like that, I need a new accountant to take advantage of.
Right,
dicey tax breaks. Come on,
of outsourcing.
Come on, man. Yeah, that's good. But yeah, all right. So, all right. Here's my statement, my thesis.
Okay.
I was shocked more than anything else. I didn't even think. I guess the conventional wisdom was that Obama was flat and didn't seem like he was on his game, whatever. I didn't really feel like that at all. I think it was just Obama doing his Obama thing. He wasn't real feisty. I think he was intentionally not feisty. That didn't really bother me. What struck me the most is the incredible tack to the center, I guess we'll call it gracefully, that Mitt is trying to pull off here when he's actually debating something where people might be paying attention. Somehow he... If he ran at all on what he said last night in a Republican primary, I mean he wouldn't get a single vote, I wouldn't think. Not only that, I think if you put his comments in a transcript and you read it aloud to any good Republican voter, much less a Tea Party voter, they'd be like, "Who's that Democrat talking?" He completely co-opted all the best parts of a Democratic platform while glossing over all the bad parts pretty much. So here he is talking about, I mean, he's talking about teachers. He's talking about who's better at saving Medicare, which is socialized medicine, but boy, he's going to save it more than someone else is. He's talking about, he's all about the middle class somehow. Suddenly he gets accused of a big tax cut. And he says, oh, that tax cut, that's too big. That's not my big tax cut. Mine's not that big. He's talking about how his tax cut isn't so big. It's like, who is this guy?
Size doesn't matter, Rob.
Motion of the ocean. So when it comes down to like the healthcare, like his only distinction, like he's touting the Romney Care now, and the only distinction he makes between that and the evil Obamacare of socialism and death panels is that one's at the state level and one's at the federal level. Man, that's a pretty tiny distinction there.
No, he said they do not have a panel. That is right. Not a tiny distinction.
No,
they don't have a
right.
Panel.
Well, I was
you said yeah, they
I
did.
I was giggling about death panels. There's no death panel.
Obama's death panel.
What I'm saying, it's not about the panel. What I'm saying is,
it was
is that
about the
is,
panel.
No, it's not about the panel. What I'm saying is out of the incredible fervor and outrage and oh my God, hair on fire, world's going to end about Obamacare. In that debate, when it came time to actually confront Obama from a Republican candidate about Obamacare, the difference was well, mine was at the state level, and the and we don't have a panel of bureaucrats. That was it.
No, that was not it. That was not it. He pointed out that 30 million people are going to lose the health care they like. That was another big piece of it, Rob.
I didn't hear that as a big piece. Maybe
that you. Okay. It was a medium piece. No. What do you want to? That was one of the things he kept talking about.
How about this?
Mitt Romney kept talking about.
Come on. What did we go through the last 4 years when we were talking? Our last 4 years. Last 4 years when we've been talking about Obamacare. Was it about how many people were going to lose their insurance? No, it was about socialism. It was about government takeover of healthcare. It was about the whole idea was completely wrong, and the free market should handle all this healthcare stuff. That's what the debate was about. Now we come to this, and it's like, well, I want to save Medicare, and I like government-run health care as long as it's at the state level. Like,
he did not say he likes government-run health care.
He liked RomneyCare. That's government-run health care.
No. They have
Obamacare at the state level.
He said he was talking about private insurance. He said, I would rather have private insurance than government health care.
Well, I'd rather have unicorns and rainbows. What does that matter? I think we would all have rather have it all be private. That's not the
Obama.
It's the fact that
not
the
private, Democrats who supported this and passed it.
It's the fact that the private system isn't working is the problem. Yeah, I wish everyone could make a profit and get health care. It doesn't seem like it's working out that way. So to summarize here, and it is that
summarize your bogus points?
My incredible point. Is that to me, the guy, I mean, all right, I think he's playing it right, is what he's doing. Is he knows, this is maybe my liberal lefty talking, he knows that all of the things that he said during the primary is not going to win him a general election. The only thing that does is fire up the base of people who are already going to vote Republican. Now it's time. Now he's pulling the Etch-a-Sketch, and he's tacking severely to the center, and almost to me sounding like an Obama light. I guess the thing you can fault Obama on this is that he didn't call him out on it. But it's also just so inauthentic, you know. It's just not. You know,
all right, Rob, I can't let you keep talking like this, because you act surprised every time a politician uses a political ploy that every politician does every election, where when they're trying to get their party's nomination, they are the root of that party. We're going to do this, we're going to do that, and it's all about what their party
believes. No.
Then when they get to the other, they move to the middle. They accuse Hillary Clinton of doing similar things.
No.
They accuse...
All right. Yes. You tack to the side during the primary, into the center for the general. I know how this works.
But he tacked more sharply. Is that the big problem here?
I'm saying he's abandoning all principle.
Oh my gosh.
All right, let's just pick one of them. Why is a Republican candidate up there beating his chest talking about how he's going to save Medicare? Can you explain this to me? Because first of all, the Ryan budget is trying to phase out Medicare, because that is an authentic budget. It's a budget that makes sense. It's a budget.
Are you saying that he is off message? Like the party was cringing while he was up there talking, saying, "No, don't say that."
That's kind of what I'm at. That's kind of what I'm asking. Like as a Tea Party Republican, if there is such a thing, and they're watching that, are they looking at like I can't believe what this guy's saying?
Well, I mean, I don't know, and
you know,
I wouldn't say that the Tea Party has any strong influence on Mitt Romney at this point. I would be more curious to know what the party leadership, you know, the guys in the RNC front office, what were they saying to each other, you know, during the debate last night? Was he off message, or, you know? But then you can ask the question, I mean, he is the de facto leader of the Republican Party right now,
right? Right.
So whatever he says is the party message.
Right.
By default.
Which sounds to me just so different than what I've heard the last 4 years. Maybe I was looking forward to the big argument, you know. Let's talk about socialism. Let's talk about getting rid of Medicare. Let's talk about why Medicare is socialized medicine, and let's do those pros and cons. But now we got this guy up there beating his chest about how he's going to restore cuts to Medicare.
Well, he's
like, it doesn't make sense to me. Actually,
restore cuts.
Well, I'm sorry, restore money that Obama said he would cut from Medicare.
Oh, right.
Like if you're a Republican and someone says they're going to cut $1 from Medicare, don't you stand and applaud? I mean, isn't all cuts to Medicare a good thing if you're a Republican?
Well, yeah, except during an election, because
right. See, and this is
because
people
what I for 60 vote.
They don't have anything else to do, moochers.
That's right.
So this is what I think is the difference, right? I mean, politicians play politics. I'm not I'm not Pollyannish about that. But I think Obama, for example, when he talks about Medicare, I think he thinks Medicare is a good thing. I think he really thinks it's a good thing, and he is going to use the fact that he thinks it's a good thing for political gain. Do Republicans think Medicare is a fantastic thing? I mean, what? I don't understand.
I don't think they do, generally. But boy,
last night it's like, look at this guy. He's going to take away your Medicare. Didn't you just run for 4 years about how you need to get rid of socialized medicine? Explain this to me.
Well, explain what? He's pandering.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fair.
He's pandering to the AARP.
Right. All right. Well, I'm done with that. That explains it.
And I mean, he, like you pointed out, his running mate is public enemy number one when it comes to Medicare, right? So
why did he get a running mate who's public enemy number one to Medicare when a big part of his election bid is trying to save Medicare?
Because it's all one big tightrope walk. And, you know, we talked about his choice of Paul Ryan before on the show. And
right.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I don't know why he went with him. There seemed like there could have been a whole lot of other candidates out there that he could have picked that would have helped him balance his campaign more, would have brought more people into the tent. But, you know,
right. He and that's played why it I was,
for the cool factor. Like,
well, that's why I was so excited about the Ryan pick, because I thought, like, well, this will galvanize what this message is. You know, a lot of hemming and hawing and you know, goofy statements. It's like as I complain about Romney being an inauthentic putz, I think Paul Ryan's the exact opposite. I don't agree with him, but I think he believes what he's trying to do. I think he believes in it.
Right.
And I don't know if he's right or wrong or whether he'll be able to pull it off or whether he I'm not saying that when he talks about it in a political sense that he doesn't gloss over certain things and highlight other things. That's politics. I don't find that as any kind of political sin. The big thing is that he believes what he's saying. He believes in his budget. And so I expected Romney to hook his boat to that anchor. That's a poor metaphor. And ride that anchor.
Wow, you are ride that anchor straight to the bottom. Huh?
Right, that doesn't make any sense. No.
Well, speaking of comments that Romney made that seemed, you know, off message, I made a note to myself here about 15 minutes into the debate. He's kind of crowing about the fact that he's not cutting taxes.
Right. Right.
Exactly. You know, I even tweeted at that point, read my lips, no less taxes. Because, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, he seemed to be saying, he did say, he came right out and said, I will not be lowering taxes on the rich. And, you know.
Right.
That's kind of what everybody has been accusing him of all along. So, I mean, he's responding to those criticisms. But at the same time, you know, you don't stand up there as a Republican and say you're not going to cut taxes.
Right. Yeah, it's like own it, buddy. Own your own thing. See,
okay, but how can you have it both ways, Rob? How Rob, and I guess Jerry too, to some extent. The big gripe is the rich don't pay enough taxes. Look, their rate was 14%. That's lower than a secretary, what his secretary pays.
Right.
So now he gets up there and says, "I'm not. Their taxes are low enough. They have enough money. I'm not going to cut those." Oh, he's lying.
That's not what his plan does. He's lying about what his plan does.
How do you know?
Because he just said what his plan was. Because he's out on the stump talking about how he's going to cut taxes for everybody. Because when people ask him about, well, isn't that going to unfairly cut taxes for the rich and change their rates disproportionately? He's like, I want to cut taxes for everybody.
Yeah,
you know, that's the Republican message.
But he didn't say that he's going to.
But then last night he's like, no, everybody's tax rates are the same. What the heck? Like,
what?
It's not just a tax.
He didn't say that everybody's tax rates are the same, Rob. I don't think he said that.
He said that he's not going to, what you said, he's not going to cut taxes for the rich.
Yes, he did say that.
That's not what he's been. That's the first time I've heard it from him. How about that?
Okay.
So here is another thing.
Well, so how can he make a little jib jab like that, right in the debate? I mean, how do you stump? How do you run a primary for over a year? You're on the stump saying one thing, and then like suddenly last night you're not going to do that anymore. Like what is that? It's not attack to the center. It's an illusion. It's like Doug Henning.
So
I feel like he dropped the smoke bomb and made things like mysterious, you know, like it was like Bizarro World up there.
Well, speaking of that, about 15 minutes in, Obama was talking about his trickle down theory. So,
oh yeah, there was all kinds of like confusing trickle down bottom up, because Jim Lehrer botched it in the third thing he said of the first two, which were stupid, and then he hit the trifecta by saying, "So what do you think, Mr. Obama, about your trickle down economics? Like, what? You got it backwards, buddy." And that just confused things. And then everybody was talking. And then Romney like accused Obama of having a trickle down plan. Like, what kind of bizarro world are we in? it's like you can't say that as a Republican. You're the trickle down guy. You know. It's like even the jabs didn't make sense.
Well, I think, I wrote this note down because what Obama was saying at that moment did sound exactly, it sounded like the definition of what trickle-down economics is all about. And he was saying that that is what he has been trying to implement. I'll have to find the clip and maybe put it at the end of the show so everybody can hear it. But that's what it sounded like to me. So. Yeah. It's almost like they switched bodies or something. Some bizarre. Yeah,
right. Here's some other notes I have. There, he gave like this big long intro on one of his answers about how much we need regulation on Wall Street.
Yeah.
What is that? Like he didn't just say some regulations are fine, but look, this is out of control. He didn't like tip his cap to the idea of regulations. He went on for a good 35 seconds about how awesome regulations are.
Yeah.
What the hell is that? And then he somehow ended up on the side of middle class people against New York banks. He said New York banks. He was a New York bank.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on here? It's like he inhabited the other body, and he's like fighting from within.
Right.
Yeah. It was just so strange. I found the whole thing strange. And I'm not talking about like, yeah, tax to the center or a candidate highlighting, you know, all the goody parts of their plan and not the bad parts. And, you know, I'm not surprised at what politics is, but this seemed some listeners accuse me of being too hemmy and hawy. I mean, this was like selling out all principles, everything that you've run on essentially to try to win a debate where you're really up against your opponent, and that's the time when you have to explain what your principles are. But no one likes your principles, and you can't explain them well. So you're going to just sort of like change the game in some kind of inauthentic way. And I think why Republicans love it is because they know what's going on, I think. I mean, they know they don't want Obama in there. They know he's fiddle-farting around with the facts and the whole principle of his position, but they see it working, and they're like, oh, my God, this is working. So I mean I don't fault Republicans for being excited about it, but if you're a conservative and you thought, boy, this is our chance to go toe to toe with the teleprompter man and really explain to him and the world why our Tea Party principles are the right way to go, that's not what you got. You got a co-opted Democrat.
So you don't think Obama did anything like that?
As far as like what?
Changing what he's been hammering and changing his positions a little bit because he was in a debate.
No, I thought he was consistent with everything else.
Of course he was. Yes.
I think he was.
Of course he was. When he talked about helping small businesses, and even though a couple of months ago he said, you didn't build that.
That's not him.
that's not what he said. Because
that was an unfortunate quote.
Because I didn't want him to say that.
No, that'll come on now with your "you didn't build that." I felt like it. Like Obama was consistent with his stump speeches, with his campaign message. it was the same old stuff. I'm not saying it was right. I'm not saying that it wasn't like there weren't embedded lies in there, but there were the same old embedded lies, if you want to call them lies.
He's the consistent liar, where Romney is making up new lies. That's your gripe.
It's like he changed himself. It was weird. I found it a whole thing weird. Very strange.
I find it weird where you're drawing the lines on what is strange and what is not.
Well, yeah, as you talk about lies, I mean, all politics is lies, right? I mean, is Obama going to go up there and talk about all the downsides of Obamacare? And boy, it's really going to be hard to pull this thing off, you know? I mean,
no, he's not going to do that. But what I don't like is when he talks about, he's talking about the tax break that businesses get when they move a factory overseas. And we need to change that. Well, why haven't you yet then? And don't tell me because they don't control all of government. You know, that he can't do it alone. Well, they could have. They could have. Right.
Totally good point.
Zero, right. That gets 0 points with me. And there was more than one subject where he talked about that. We need to change that. Then change it. Do it now.
Right.
Why wait until January when you're re-inaugurated?
Right, right.
To implement all these miraculous policies that are going to set us on the path to the golden egg. Right, do it now.
Right, you're right. And it's a completely valid point. That's a valid point about him. He's overstating what he could do in the future. It understates how little he has done to even get any of that done anyway. And why would we believe that in the future that he would something like, oh, all I need is one more week, you know, and I'll bang this thing out, you know?
Right.
You know, it's a completely valid point. It's a valid point about his effectiveness and his willingness to take on battles that he then goes out on the stump speech and fights on. That's fine. Those are completely valid complaints against his politics and who he is and his job as a president. Take all that stuff. I find that on a different order than Mitt Romney somehow claiming to be a warrior for the middle class against New York banks and a fighter of Medicare. You know what the heck?
Yeah, it's not entirely believable, is it?
Right.
All right, we're gonna take a break.
And I need a break.
When we come back, we're going to hit some listener feedback, and we're also going to talk about bacon. So stay with us. Are back, and we have to spend some time talking about one of the most important stories that has been in the news most recently, and that is the global bacon shortage. I'm sure you've heard this somewhere in the last week or so. They've been talking about how, I guess, drought in multiple parts of the world has affected grain prices, which in turn has led many pork-producing farmers to anticipate them scaling back in their production of pigs. So that's going to lead to a shortage and, you know, crazy price increases and dogs and cats living together and
total anarchy. So yeah. Jerry will be happier than he's ever been.
So you guys have thoughts on this?
I have thoughts. I think it's bogus.
Yeah.
One, it could be employed to, you know, it's like the oil. It's like oil prices. Well, there's a hurricane coming or there's some unrest in the Middle East. We better ratchet up the prices.
Yeah.
Just more, we had a drought. Let's see if we can ratchet up the pork prices a little bit.
Yeah.
The other, I equate this to the last, I think it's the last 2 years, I heard from various places that blue jeans and coffee were going to get very expensive because there were some, you know, great tragedy somewhere, and it was going to result in a shortage of coffee and cotton, I guess.
Because the blue jean cartel has decided to reduce production.
Right. And
what is that, Blue Peck? What do they call themselves?
I've seen, I don't pay extremely close attention to prices, but I'm still able to afford jeans and coffee. So I think we're okay on that. So I don't really buy the bacon shortage.
So you think it's all a conspiracy by Big Pork?
I think it is, yeah. Although I will say they make every damn thing in the world out of bacon now, or with bacon. There's bacon vodka, bacon
ice cream.
Bacon ice cream.
Which is an abomination. I mean, I like bacon, but come on.
But bacon's been around for a long time.
Really?
I think like a really long time. but there
Tell
hasn't
us more,
been.
Mr. Science.
Let's go back into Bible times. Cheeseburger's not good for you. But yeah, but there's definitely a bacon fad now. I mean, it's not like we just came up with bacon ice cream technology.
Right. So no, you're right. I don't understand it either. I mean, there's this bacon spray that you can buy so that you could just spray bacon flavoring on other things.
I wear that as cologne now.
Nice.
I think it's a counter reaction to the health food movement.
So I'll put a couple of links in the show notes to two stories. One, you know, talking about the global bacon shortage, and I love the fact that Britain's trade group, they call themselves the National Pig Association. I think they could have come up with a better name, but then there's another one I've got here that economists say that the bacon shortage is overblown. So we probably don't need to panic and, you know, start stocking our freezers with bacon.
That's exactly what someone who wanted us to panic would say.
That's right. That's exactly what they're expecting us to do. So we got some listener feedback from our friend Eric. Eric says, good show, entertaining discussion. And he's talking about our most recent episode, 44. My one real comment is about Jerry's assertion that the trend in America is toward a police state. I don't believe that at all. I don't think the few stories you found form the trend that you believe it does. To me, it's like saying that finding a few stories about doctor malpractice indicates that doctors are out of control and abusing their powers, so the obvious solution is to do away with doctors and let people care for themselves. He goes on to say, Lincoln suspended the writ of habeas corpus during the Civil War. During World War I, people were arrested for un-American activities, like not contributing to war bonds. It sounds like we were a lot closer to a police state then. Why don't we just go back to the era of public lynchings? Is it better for people to take the law into their own hands? One final point. Maybe you're finding these articles about police overstepping their bounds because they are news. Stories about police doing their job doesn't really make the news, does it? He also provides a link to a story in Scientific American about how the increased police presence in New York City contributed to a decrease in the crime rate there in the 1990s. So I understand where he's going with his comments that, you know, he's kind of engaging in the same thing I did. He's pointing to some examples in the past, you know, some very egregious examples in our history, and saying, look how bad it was back then. We don't have that going on now. So clearly, you know, this isn't a police state, but you know, how do you define police state? I don't really know. I mean, that's one of those things that's just kind of, you know, you feel it. Like, I can't define it, but I know it when I see it, kind of thing. And as far as, you know, the statistics from New York City, the crime rate going down, I mean, I don't know what is a hallmark of a police state if not decreased crime rates, right? So I'm not sure that he's making his case by citing that. Because, I mean, you could have a one-to-one ratio of cops to people, right? And, yes. And you'd have very low crime. But I think you're coming pretty close to a police state at that point.
I agree. And the practices in New York, they've implemented the random pat-downs on the sidewalk. Well, that's pretty much the definition there, that they can take liberties with your freedom. You don't have freedom. You don't have, can't exercise your Fourth Amendment or live by it, however you want to say it.
Right.
I sent that in the email back, I think, that I didn't believe that statement supported a non-police state argument.
But I guess in a general sense, I think when I think police state, you know, I'm thinking about police abuse primarily. So, you know, these individual incidents that I've cited, because I maintain an archive of stories that I find in the news about misconduct of law enforcement. You know, these individual stories to me represent a trend, and maybe this is just a trend because, you know, we're living in the age of cell phone cameras now. So every time you see one of these videos that gets, you know, uploaded to YouTube or, you know, posted on the news, you know, I'm not saying that these incidents are any more frequent. We're just hearing about them more frequently, and we're seeing direct evidence of them more frequently. And I think it's always been going on. I think there's always been corruption in police departments, and no matter how hard you try, you can't get rid of that. But, you know, police state to me means that it's more the attitude of the cops themselves and what they feel their role is. And I guess I would point to the fact that we call them law enforcement officers now, where in the past they were referred to as peace officers. I think their role has changed, and that's probably more a function of society than anything else, just our attitude towards cops and you know, the role we want them to play. So I don't know. That's just kind of my, you know, my feeling, my thumbnail sketch of what I'm thinking here on that. Rob?
All right.
No thoughts?
No thoughts.
Do we have any other stories we want to talk about?
You said you're going to put the secret Cold War tests.
Oh, yeah.
Article in the reading room?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, interesting story there about government spraying dangerous chemicals in the air in St. Louis back in the 50s. That's awesome.
Definitely worth reading.
Yeah. So that'll be in the reading room. Our listeners can check that out. I think that's about it. I want to thank our listeners once again and say we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye now.
Let's talk about taxes, because I think it's instructive. Now, 4 years ago when I stood on this stage, I said that I would cut taxes for middle-class families. And that's exactly what I did. We cut taxes for middle-class families by about $3,600. And the reason is because I believe that we do best when the middle class is doing well. And by giving them those tax cuts, they had a little more money in their pocket. And so maybe they can buy a new car. They are certainly in a better position to weather the extraordinary recession that we went through. They can buy a computer for their kid who's going off to college, which means they're spending more money, businesses have more customers, businesses make more profits, and then hire more workers. Now, Governor Romney's proposal that he's been promoting for 18 months calls for a $5 trillion tax cut on top of $2 trillion of additional spending for our military. And he is saying that he is going to pay for it by closing loopholes and deductions. The problem is that he's been asked over 100 times how you would close those deductions and loopholes, and he hasn't been able to identify them. But I'm going to make an important point here, Jim. When you add up all the loopholes and deductions that upper-income individuals are currently taken advantage of, you take those all away, you don't come close to paying for $5 trillion in tax cuts and $2 trillion in additional military spending.